Lucky's Trailer Sales in Peterbilt, Vermont. It's Buster Olney. How you doing, Buster?
I'm doing okay, guys. What's going on?
What did you think of the All-Star game last night, my friend?
I thought, look, there were some tremendous moments that meant a lot. You know, I mean, especially in Cleveland with Michael Brantley getting a big cheer before the game. Carlos Carrasco, when they had the stand but cancer moment, to see all the Indians stand around him and give him support, that was really cool. It's good that he seems to be getting better. And CeCe Sabathia at the end, getting a chance to go out in the ninth inning and visit the mound as he got honored. I thought those were really cool. Now, the quality of the game itself, it wasn't a great game, that's for sure. It wasn't nearly as good as the Home Run Derby.
Yeah,
I saw you put out on Twitter that you thought that might have been the best Derby ever. Do you stand by that statement a couple of days later?
Well, I said that I had there were two Derbies for me that this one stacked right up with the Todd Frazier Home Run Derby in Cincinnati in 2015, the year they changed the format to go to more of a timed situation for the hitters. Absolutely. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, it was funny to me that I think the Peterson and Vladdy Jr. matchup was so unbelievable, basically with the three overtimes, I think it was, that by the end of that, it was like the crowd was just worn out. I mean, they were gassed. And you could feel that, and you know, Pete Alonso did a great job in that final round. But you could tell he was even trying to get the crowd going and get some energy. But I don't think they have anything left to give after that great matchup between Peterson and Vladdy.
Buster, you mentioned the CeCe Sabathia ceremony. He throws out the first pitch. He goes out there in the ninth inning to talk to Aroldis Chapman to get one more ovation. He seems to be pretty revered around the game, and that's something that I knew he was liked, but I didn't think it reached the level that it apparently has.
Oh, yeah. I think in my time covering baseball, he's the best teammate that I've ever seen, in terms of how accountable he is. And I find myself, when I go and speak to groups of high school kids or college kids and doing my job, I find myself, and I've told CeCe this, telling more stories about him and his mom and how he was raised to be accountable than anybody else. And that, you know, certainly has that sort of accountability and tolerance and inclusiveness has resonated in clubhouses. I think that people really learned a lot about CeCe in 2008 when he got traded to the Brewers from the Indians, and he was about ready to become a free agent, and he started taking the ball on 3 days rest. My favorite story to tell about that is that When the Brewers did that repeatedly, his agent at the time, Brian Peters, called the Brewers and general manager Doug Melvin and said, "Hey, well, you know, what are you doing here? The guy's a free agent at the end of the year, and that's not really fair that you're asking him to do that and putting so much at risk." And CeCe found out about that and called Brian and said, "Don't ever do that again. I'm doing everything I can to get these guys in the playoffs. I'm not worried about the contract. I'm focused on the Brewers and trying to win. And you know what? Come down to the hotel. I'm going to buy you lunch. I'm going to yell at you some more." And he was great for the Brewers, and then he signed the 7-year 161 with the Yankees. And during that time, when the Yankees were wooing him, Brian Cashman said to him, "Look, not only do we need you on the pitching staff, we need you to come in and change our clubhouse culture, which stinks." And he has absolutely done that. And here's another thing, too. And at some point this season, on Sunday Night Baseball, we're going to do this. It was Paul Byrd who played with him was telling me, I said, "Yeah, CeCe for me is the best teammate that I've ever witnessed." And Paul Byrd told me, he said, "Yeah, you're telling me he sends out the best Christmas presents ever." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Every year, his Christmas card is like a Christmas present slash events, greeting. It's unbelievable. And I asked him about it, and he said, "Yep, I send out about 500 every year." All, you know, so many of his former teammates are on his Christmas list. He really is just a terrific person.
Buster Olney of ESPN, thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales in Peterbilt of Vermont. It's home to New England's largest selection of trailers online at luckystrailers.com. Buster, Arnie and I were talking about, was there too much made of CeCe last night? Like, does he have, like, are we thinking of him too high, giving him too much of a send-off? I said no because it was in Cleveland and he used to play there. If that game had been played in Miami, I would have said yes. Do you think he would have gotten that same tribute everywhere or just because it was Cleveland?
I thought it was the perfect fit because it was Cleveland. So, of course, Arnie, you're wrong. I mean, that's a simple fact. And I agree with you that, it, you know, Cleveland had a lot to do with it. And I'm sure that that was part of the discussion. Okay, how do we, you know, how can we have a great event in Cleveland? I don't know if they would have done the same thing in another city, but it worked out great that it was there, where, you know, the fans there love CC and still respect CC for what he did there. And so I think that definitely was a big part of it.
Buster, what'd you think of all the access to the players, the mic, the cameras, the helmet cam, all
I that, loved that.
You loved it all, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you get the personality. It was funny because I, you know, I got, I talked to Fred, I was doing work in the National League dugout for ESPN Radio during the game, and so I talked to Freddie after he came out, and I asked him about the byplay between he and Verlander, and Freddie kept saying to me, he said, I didn't get a chance to swing the bat. And he said that someone on the staff immediately sent in the video afterward, and he said, every pitch Verlander threw was right on the black. What's that about? Like, you know, two curveballs and right on the black. You know, I asked Kristen Yelich, and I didn't actually see the clip of him and narrating catching a fly ball deep in left field, but I asked him, I said, were you able to do this? Yeah, I tried to do a good job with it. Why not? You know, just get the players having fun. You can tell that they were enjoying it, enjoying the moment, and that's, to me, is what it really is supposed to be about. And I think this is the last year that I'm going to complain about. They don't play the games to win anymore. Just because it's never going to go back. But, I mean, within the context of what they're doing now, I thought it was great.
Buster, a lot of the media stuff was interesting this week. First, what'd you think of Justin Verlander slamming the baseballs and saying that they're juiced?
Well, first off, and Manfred has acknowledged, and acknowledged a few weeks ago, that the baseballs are different. We've been talking about the baseballs being different for the last couple of years. But I think the fact that Justin said it on the same day that he was announced as the All-Star starter is the reason why that before yesterday's game, he got called into the principal's office, and Joe Torre and Jim Leland, who, of course, they work for Major League Baseball now. Jim Leland used to be his manager. They chewed him out. Look, I personally think there are a lot of different factors that have contributed to the home run. I think the ball is definitely a big part of it. I think the way hitters have played it are a big part of it. I'm not wild about, you know, the way that Justin did it. And my question is that, you know, baseball has gone through a lot of ebbs and flows with the equipment, the ball, you know, the style of play. And what would it sound like if in 1968 or, you know, 2008 or 2013, some hitter came out and said, you know what, the ball's dead. It stinks. It's a joke. How that would be perceived. You know,
right?
Yeah. And my question is, what makes the baseballs right or correct? You know, what's the correct baseball? Is it when it fits Justin Verlander's specifications?
Right.
I bet you there are a lot of hitters who would probably disagree with that. That's why it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. The other thing too is that I just don't believe that there's some massive conspiracy on baseball's part. Because I don't think baseball is that organized and that smart. I don't think they could pull that off. And, you know, the other thing, too, is keep this in mind, that in order for Rob Manfred to do something like that, he would put the owners at hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars at risk, according to the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, because according to that agreement, he can't affect, and by national labor law, he can't affect a substantive change like that without running it past the players.
Wow.
And that's something I think is forgotten in this case. And I heard from, you know, team management people were saying to me yesterday, you know what, if they were sitting in Manfred's shoes, they would basically go through a legal challenge to the union and basically put Verlander in his place by saying, if you got something, you got proof, then step up.
Wow.
Or we're gonna go to a grievance because of what he said.
Wow,
Buster. Another media thing that was interesting was JD Martinez addressing his contract situation. Should Red Sox fans feel better or worse about what he had to say about his future in Boston?
Well, first off, there are a couple things going on here. You know, I mean, he's certainly still chafed by the fact that there wasn't more action on him before he signed with the Red Sox. But here's the thing. I don't think that there's necessarily going to be a lot of action on him this fall because the perception of him as being a DH-first guy and being someone you really can't play in the outfield, that's going to continue. And when you look around at the landscape of the American League, who needs a designated hitter, okay? We know that the Yankees aren't going to because they have Stanton, they have Judge, they have other sluggers on that team, so they're not going to be the team that pays him. You know, the Tampa Bay Rays aren't going to pay him. And you can go through that exercise team to team to team. It's going to be really difficult for him to get a huge contract in the offseason from another team. And there's no question. I feel like, you know, when the Red Sox didn't address this in spring training, that probably gnawed at him to some degree because, you know, that opt-out clause is there, and it'll be very interesting to see what the Red Sox decide to do when, presuming that at some point he opts out of his deal.
Now, Buster, the Players Union, Tony Clark says that baseball doing a poor job of marketing Red Sox outfielder Mookie Betts. They say, no, he doesn't want to be anything. He doesn't want to be in the commercials. He's turning down endorsements. He didn't want to be the kids in the kids baseball commercial. What's going on here? What's happening here?
Well, first off, I mean, it all comes back to this for me, is that there's the collaborative nature of the relationship between Major League Baseball and the Players Association is the worst that I've ever seen.
Wow.
It's awful. And, you know, that you could tell that the two parties yesterday, as Tony Clark and Rob Manfred spoke, they're talking past each other. And how long have we been talking about, boy, wouldn't it be great if baseball did this, or wouldn't it be great if baseball did this? Wouldn't it be great if they address service time manipulation? Wouldn't it be great if they market the players better? All that stuff can't happen unless the two sides are talking and collaborating, and they haven't been. And it's really awful. And you do get into situations like this where, you know, I agree. You know, Mookie should be a great star, but there has to be some sort of a process through which the two sides are working together to make that happen. I really don't think it's constructive for Tony to blame baseball for all by themselves for not doing that, because the union certainly hasn't stepped up either to come up with a process to market these guys in the most effective way possible.
Buster Olney of ESPN, thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales and Peterbilt of Vermont. Stop by the Colchester location. See Tom Chase in truck sales. More than 35 years of experience in the trucking industry. Lucky'sTrailers.com. Buster, second half of the season, what's the key for the Red Sox to try to make a playoff push?
No doubt, Chris Sale. I mean, if you were to list 10 things that have to happen for the Red Sox to make the postseason, I think Chris Sale would be 9 of them. Mm-hmm. They just need him to perform better because, you know, and I talked to one of the Red Sox people in the last few days. I'm like, you know, what do you think going forward? Because, you know, we need the big guy. Big guy's got to step up and pitch better and be more consistent than he has. And Chris Sale would be the first one to say that. I also think, I mean, let's face it, before the deadline, they need to do some things. But I mentioned to you last week, you got a sense that, you know, folks in the front office are like, yeah, we're interested in trying to make this team better, but we're not going to go nuts to try to do it unless we see them perform better. And last week was good because they won 5 out of 6 games. But let's face it, they were playing poor teams.
Yes.
And we'll see how they do as they move forward.
Buster, how about the Yankees? They want a starting pitcher. Is it going to be Stroman? Is it going to be Boyd of the Tigers? Are they going to go after Bumgarner?
What can they do?
Well, here's the thing, and I think Stroman definitely fits. I don't think that Bumgarner is going to be an option for them. I think you know, any team that really relies heavily on analytics, and the Yankees might be right near the top of that list, there are real red flags around Bumgarner. Stroman, I think, fits because he's demonstrated time and again he loves the big stage.
Yeah.
And he's a Long Island kid. He's been all but lobbying for a trade to the Yankees. We saw last year that the Blue Jays and the Yankees are capable of doing business together because they made the J-Hap trade. And I've been saying all along, I think the Yankees, not only are they going to get a starting pitcher, but I absolutely think that Brian Cashman, their general manager, will wind up making a strike for a reliever. And it'll be because people look at the bullpen and say they don't really need bullpen help. Brian, through the years that I've known him, absolutely believes in having overloaded bullpens. And so I think they're going to get one big bullpen piece and one rotation piece. And these will be players. The guys they target, I think, are going to be players that they'll control beyond 2019. which is another reason why Bumgarner doesn't fit, because he's a free agent in the fall.
Buster, the one team we should be keeping an eye for the second half that maybe is coming in under the radar that's going to explode, and people can say, well, I knew they were going to do that. Who should we keep an eye on?
Boy, and some of the options that are running through my head, you're probably going to go, yeah, we kind of knew that. Like, I talked to Brian Snicker, the manager of the Braves, the other day.
Yeah.
They just keep getting better and better and better. Now, they're already leading their division, so that probably doesn't qualify for what you're looking for.
Right.
The Indians are doing well, but I think there's some smoke and mirror stuff going on there a little bit.
Right.
So I don't know if they'd be capable of. And if you guys can figure out the National League Central, you can get a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Okay? 'Cause all five of those teams are basically trying to figure out exactly what they are. If you're looking for one sleeper team, I'm really fascinated by the Cincinnati Reds.
Ooh.
Because they have terrific pitching. I think they've been played better than what the record indicates. And what they need, which is an offensive bat, you can get one of those. That's easy to get in this current marketplace. And I think they'll make a deal for a hitter before the deadline.
He's Buster Olney, ESPN MLB Insider. Thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales and Peterbilt of Vermont. Buster, always a pleasure. Back to work with you now that the All-Star break is done. Have a great week, buddy. We'll speak to you next week.
You guys, too. And by the way, Brady, I don't know if you heard, I'm starting to take the gloves off and dealing with your brother as the producer of my podcast.
I heard you ripped him because he went to sleep the other day before watching all of the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, what's that about? How could you be related to someone who does that?
Buster, my brother and I are very, very opposite. He is very, very regimented. He gets up at 5. He likes to go to bed by 9. I told him, I said, stop admitting that on the Baseball Tonight podcast that you didn't watch the Home Run Derby in its entirety. I just said, just lie and say you saw it.
Yeah, and then I would quiz him. But now that you've told me that, I'm just going to break him down every time.
Well, he'll watch it in the morning. He'll watch it on tape. He'll watch the most in-depth highlights ever. He just likes to be in bed early.
I'm going to expose him.
Please do. Please do.
I'll see you.
Buster, take care. Buster, all the everybody joins us every week. It's always good to talk to Buster.